call this meeting to order. May I have a roll call?
You may. We're documenting. One second.
It's rolling. All right, Mr. O'Connell.
Here.
Mr. Graham.
Here.
Ms. English Dixon.
Here.
Ms. Moss.
Here.
Mr. Brangle.
Here.
Mr. Neubecker.
Here.
And Mr. Hissinski.
Here.
Forum.
And we have everybody. Welcome back. The purpose of the meeting primarily is to get everyone updated on this project. Discuss how we're moving forward. First, absent any public presence, we can move on to item three, approval of the minutes of the last meeting. Our last meeting was in August 15th, 2016. And we have minutes here, which should refresh our memory on that meeting. So, do I have a motion to approve these minutes?
So moved.
Second?
Second.
Seconded. Any discussion, questions, additions? All in favor of approval, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion approved. Next item is introduction of new members. And we welcomed Bob O'Connell and Rob Graham last time, but we haven't had an opportunity to welcome me to our board. For Lee's benefit, before we ask him to talk about himself and why he's here, let's all very quickly introduce ourselves and say a sentence or two about.
100, it's like a tweet. 140 characters.
Yes.
Be careful with those.
Be careful. That's a very touchy subject.
I've been in the River Forest for probably 15, almost 20 years. Who keeps counting more? I work in commercial real estate. Children are out of the house and felt I wanted to give back to the community. And the host was excellent. Formed this an excellent platform to do that.
Jim Brangle, I know Lee pretty well, but Chicago Consultant Studio, so I'm an urban planner and doing a strategic development for Maryland urban sections. And I thought, as Nina said too, it was a good opportunity to bring those skill sets to River Forest and help promote economic development and build that tax base.
Well, Kathy Gann, I'm an ex officio member representing River Forest Chamber of Commerce, which is the legal partner of Commerce.
Tom Pazinski. Background in public policy, and I run a consulting firm that focuses on public-private partnerships in the hospitality industry.
Colette English Dixon. I've spent most of my career in the real estate investment management space, and am a 21-year resident of River Forest, and thought it might be a good way to engage on a different level.
Bob Graham. Background is all in manufacturing, heavy manufacturing. I was a past trustee for 8+ years, involved in the Town Center One acquisition and development, and I just miss coming to meetings at 7:30 in the morning.
Bob O'Connell, I'm the National Real Estate Manager for McDonald's. I've been in commercial development for 30-something years, both on the retail and developer side of things. I lived in River Forest for about 20 years, then moved away, and then came back recently. In conversations with a lot of people and past experiences, always thought there was some energy. There should be some energy around commercial development, and as our public officials have talked about lowering the tax base, retail development is a way to do that, and figuring out a way to combine that with, you know, the maintaining the character of River Forest was kind of appealing to me. So I thought I'd take a run at it, see if I can make some headway with it.
Lee, would you like to?
Sure. Well, I apologize for not being here at the last meeting. My kids had sunk a boat in Lake Erie, and we had to head out. So that was unfortunate that I missed the August meeting. That was a Sunday night. But I used to be involved with Lakeview Citizens Council on the board as their treasurer. And I saw a lot of economic development activity happen, some good, some bad, in Lakeview. I moved here in 2011 with my kids, who are now 13 and 14, soon to be at OPRF. And I wanted to get more involved with my community, my background. I ran a business called Forensicon, a computer forensics firm that mostly did trade secret theft investigations and corporate trade secrets and IP. But I also did a little bit of cyber breach investigations and recently just formed my own cyber breach response firm. So right now I'm looking forward to a summer that hopefully doesn't have construction on Greenfield or my home. And I'm hoping to enjoy the summer some, play some tennis, and get to know all of you better.
Welcome. Thank you. Welcome. Moving on to our next agenda item, I ask Eric to update us on the projects that we've been discussing all along, perhaps.
So I just sent you just a brief status memo on Thursday night outlining those items. So I'll kind of walk through them real quick, and as always, if you have questions, more than happy to answer those. So Lake and Lathrop, the never-ending project. So back last year, when we talked, there was continuing discussions about acquisition of property, putting forth a redevelopment agreement, a plan development application. Those conversations went on and on. There were a couple amendments to the redevelopment agreement allowing for more time to that happen. And if you recall, Keystone Ventures and Inland Real Estate made up the development team. There was a breakup of that team late last year. Keystone then partnered with Sedgwick Development. Sedgwick Development, their primary is Marty Paris. Marty's a longtime resident, so they have partnered together on Lake and Lathrop now. Inland is out, Sedgwick is in. So that's the status of the development team. There was another amendment to the redevelopment agreement to allow for the new development team more time. Again, the two issues at play are the acquisition of property and then also the putting forth a plan development application. I'm pleased. I can't get into the specifics, but I can tell you there's been significant progress in terms of the acquisition items, and so I'm hopeful in the next week or two the village will have an announcement on that that we can share, and then subsequently having a plan development application submitted as well. Inland did submit one late last year, probably November-ish. It was incomplete. There were items that were, you could tell it was a little bit rushed, put together, and that never really went anywhere. So that's gone back, and they're going to submit another application. But there is significant progress in terms of the acquisition components. So I'm hopeful, like I said, in another week or two, we'll be able to share that information with you and have a public announcement. That in itself is a significant milestone as it relates to this project, so we're hopeful in that regard.
Okay. Glad to hear there's progress.
Yeah.
I just want to be clear. So the agreement that the village had was with Keystone, right?
It was with a separate LLC.
Okay. So that agreement's been transferred over to this new entity then. Was that done by the board resolution?
No, so the agreement is still with Lake and Lathrop Partners LLC. The makeup of Lake
members.
Yeah, it's okay, changed members.
So the entity has stayed the same and the members have changed.
Correct. But they still have to, when that happens, there's still a prove up, a notification of that transaction, if you will.
One of the probably compelling reasons why the board hung out with the original LLC with Inland in it was because of the capital wherewithal that Inland brought to the table. Does Sedgwick come to the table with the same sort of financial confidence, because that's really what Inland was there for? Or are they going to have to, do you know, are they going to have to go out and try to find capital between the two of them in order to affect the transaction? Because that's not as much of a sure bet right now as it might have been a year ago.
I can't speak to the, I don't disagree with you in terms of the component of what Inland brought to the table. We've had some preliminary discussions about that capital component. There doesn't seem to be any concerns, at least at this point, from the development team. At least that's what's been shared with me.
Well, they're not going to tell you anything other than that.
Yeah, no, right? I don't disagree. You know, at this point, we're taking it step by step, and so just getting the property acquired is step one. But as they move forward, yes, that's something they have to prove up in terms of moving forward with the development project, absolutely.
Is there a timeline on that?
The development, the plan development application is supposed to be submitted by this middle of this month. The acquisition deadline was at the end of the last, this previous month, end of February. At this point, they've met the requirements that are needed within the RDA to keep the thing moving along. And then I'd have to go back, Nina, and look at the dates that we put in for remediation and things like that.
I'm concerned about the financing.
Well, the financing prove-up would come as part of the plan development application.
Yep. Is there any requirement of the development to have first floor?
Is there any requirement of the development to have first floor retail?
Yes.
Yep. Thanks.
Is this the excuse me, property up against the TIF deadline? Or are we in good shape there?
In terms of the 1.9 million?
Yeah.
Yeah, that is less of a concern at this point because the money has been recommitted through the redevelopment agreement.
Fabulous.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And part of that has been expended at this point, about 300 some odd thousand for the acquisition of that lot on Ashland.
Right.
So you're down to about 1.6 and change.
Very good. Thank you.
So, not to be the naysayer, but so if they go away, what happens to the money that's already been spent? And then what assurances do we have that that money is still going to be available if the village has to go out and find another developer?
Well, the money's in our control, so it's in our bank accounts and things like that. So there are specific remedies within the RDA as it relates to, let's say, the Ashland property. So if the development never got online, there's a kind of a put-call type of language that talks about either the developer reimbursing the village or the property coming back to the village at the village's discretion. So there's some items there. And there are there is extensive remedy language as it relates to the rest of it. I can't recall it off the top of my head. But that was what really took so long on the RDA, which, I mean, that negotiation took probably close to a year because we were trying to play out all those scenarios, right? What happens if the developer goes under? What happens if the market changes? What happens if this and what happens if that? And I'd like to think we got a majority, if not all, of those different scenarios, at least between us, the development team. And obviously it's not just the village coming forth and saying, well, what if this happens? What if this happens? Developers obviously who have been somewhat snake-bitten in the past from the economy are also sensitive to those things as well. So it certainly is a different, the framework and the context of those RDA negotiations are different for those reasons. And then throw in contaminated property, which the village was aware at some point things could go bad and it could all fall on our lap. I mean, that was part of the policy discussion that the board had at one point. But part of the reason we are continuing to push this along, even at a slow pace, unfortunately, is because of that component, right? Because there is, and that's why it's always, in my mind, always been the number one development priority, because you do have that contamination in the ground, and you've got this public subsidy sitting there that you want to ensure is used correctly.
I guess I have a question for everybody. You know, we have been operating in a pretty positive development environment where financing has been available for various types of real estate. One of our thoughts was that we wanted to take advantage of that while the getting was good, right? It might be helpful to Eric and generally to the village if we provided our perspective on where we think these markets are going. What's our view? Are we concerned that in the next year's financing is not going to be available. I mean, especially for those of you who are involved day-to-day in real estate activity, what are you seeing in terms of market direction that might be useful for the village to know as they are trying to impose deadlines and move things along?
Do you want to go through the rest of these and then circle back?
I think it's relevant, particularly relevant to this project, so we get it.
Well, it also will be, I also think it's something that will be impactful on Lincoln Park, I mean, as you go back into the RFP process, so I think kind of that insight or engagement is probably good information. The sentiment right now is that the markets are still relatively healthy, and there's still a meaningful amount of capital looking to be placed in the markets. Now, of course, all these discussions are usually focused on larger, urban, core, you know, kind of the profile stuff. They don't usually kind of give you the nuances of, well, if you're off of Main and Main in downtown Chicago or downtown San Francisco or whatever, what it looks like. And what's starting to happen is that there's plenty of money available, but it's harder and harder to get it. There are increasing concerns about rent growth, demand, and construction costs. And so all those things are starting to reflect themselves in a bit of a squeeze in the underwriting. It's not that the money's not there. Interest rates are sure to move again. And that is, while it's an interesting thing, because interest rates, the movement of 25 basis points in the Fed rate does not necessarily translate directly into return expectations from like an equity view perspective, you know, necessarily, but it does have a direct impact on debt. And where they think that yield curve is going to go is going to start impacting how much it's going to cost for people to get financing, which is why I was a little concerned. I'm like, you know, when we were talking about this in 2015, the world looked very, very different, and there was a lot more runway as people were looking at underwriting rent, underwriting demand, and interest rates hadn't started to move. And so those kind of financial dynamics that go into penciling out a deal are becoming harder, are getting a little bit of a squeeze on them right now. But there's money. It's just all about how much it costs you and how much of it they're going to be willing to give you on debt, you know, 65% versus 60%. I think some of those equity components are going to be a little bit harder to get for some of the non-major deals. And that's going to be, you know, problematic. And in the multifamily space and the housing space, you know, that we're in a very different market than we were 2 years ago. And that's also going to have some impact on underwriting.
I mean, we've seen articles popping up about rent growth, especially in western suburbs, Elmhurst, Oak Park, leading the way in the metro area. From an underwriting perspective, it seems like that's a positive thing in that you can have a higher price point in your rents when you're trying to underwrite, so that should help, I would think. Although it might start having an effect on demand, right?
So, right.
Yeah.
But you're also, right now, you're talking about a point in time and a project that hasn't even started being built yet. So you're talking about what people are going to expect in 2 years. And I'd rather have been renting today
yes.
and taking advantage of what may be a higher rent growth. And I would say that some of the rent growth in the suburbs is being driven by the fact that there's new product coming online vis-a-vis the older product, which couldn't move rents as aggressively. So that rent growth is kind of embedded in just what they needed to get to justify the cost of what they built. So it isn't like a natural rent growth model. It's a big move. And I don't know that that's sustainable. And we're still talking, we're not going to be coming out of the ground somewhere until, I don't know, I mean, and so I think that projection is a little bit of the concern.
So one of the things that we're seeing is we're going to spend probably $1 billion in capital this year on reinvestment in our business. And the one item that you highlighted, which is really a big concern, is construction costs. I mean, you know, there's a lack of trade people out there to do the work. And so hence, you know, the people that are bidding on these jobs, they're, you know, they feel like they have the world, you know, world by the tail, and they're just going to swing it around for a while. So we see that a lot. And then just generally on the retail side, and, you know, Nina sees it too, is, you know, the type of retailers that, you know, hopefully the developer would target, you know, would be, you know, people that's, it's probably, it's more entrepreneurial today than it probably has been in past years. So, you know, you're not going to get the, you know, you're not going to get the national chains that are looking to fill, you know, 2,000 square feet on Main Street anymore. You know, it's the people like a lot of things that we see, you know, both here in River Forest and Forest Park and in Oak Park. So it's going to be a little bit of a challenge. And, you know, and as, you know, as people have joked about, there's always room for another bank, but they don't generate any retail sales tax.
Yeah. Going along with that is the rent, that the construction cost, the rent that's going to have to be paid for that commercial product, the retail space, and those, usually that non-national tenant that's going to go in there, can they afford that? And can they maintain that rent? Or do we all of a sudden have an empty building like we do over on Madison Street and Forest Park? When we look at some of the vacancy over there in the new construction.
Yeah, I just wanted to lend my perspective, having been involved in the membership committee of the Union League Club of Chicago. We were looking a lot at the demographics, and what we saw were that millennials were, you know, they're now 34, 35, they're starting to earn money. Millennials aged 18 to 35, now number 35 million relative to boomers boomers ages 51 to 69 are at 74.9 million. So looking at that combined with what's happening with Chicago Public Schools and the meltdown of their ability to fund the pension obligations and what's happening to class sizes and school years, I think we're going to see a huge demand coming in, since we're still, you know, walkable to the CTA, of millennials that are professional millennials wanting to move here with their kids, you know, when their kids hit 5, 6, 7. And so, you know, the development that we do, I think we need to look at what would younger families want as we're considering this. And things like parking, you know, might become important, and other things like that. So as much as right now the market has kind of felt like it's been chugging like this, I think given another 3 to 5 years, we're going to see real price appreciation, especially at the entry level and mid level.
Kathy, you have any comments?
I just echo what Bob and Nina are saying about the ability to attract those commercial tenants once it's all said and done. There's significant investment in the transit related districts of Oak Park that are going to attract, you know, any of the national folks that are going to want to be in this area. On top of what you all see at Lake and Harlem in that area, Lincoln Properties will start building. There'll be retail there. That should break ground probably in May. And there's a significant amount of work being done on Madison Street. Also, these types of buildings, and frankly, some of these same people involved. So what we're seeing when you move out of these transit areas is the mom and pops kind of move to the periphery. But to again echo what Nina said, they can't afford the rent. So when we say retail to the public, they all think it's going to be a boutique and a cafe. It is not going to be a boutique and a cafe that's going to last more than a year. Expanding whether it's financial services, medical, these are the places that can afford the retail rents and the spaces. Places with low build-out, your fitness places, your fitness franchises, those are the ones that are hitting these sort of peripheral new constructions.
Thanks. I'm always impressed with the insights that this group has. And I think they really are useful as the village is looking forward. It always, I think that time is always the enemy in development, because you never know what the market's going to be like going forward. And there's some real interesting developments. So I think it's really important to try to move things along. We still appear to have opportunity to get development, so we don't have to wait for the next cycle in development. So that was a bit of a distraction, but mm-hmm. Eric, but I hope it's helpful.
Oh, it's very helpful.
Your perspective on how to move forward on these deals. So
yeah.
Anything else on Lake and Lathrop?
No. The one comment I would make, too, though, and I agree with what many of you have all said, you know, that's a discussion we have as well in terms of the build-out of new development space. So you have the older development space where the property taxes are lower, the maintenance costs are lower, you know, those become more attractive, and then you redevelop that, and how does that play in when your rents, you know, you look at the rents out at Town Center especially, I mean, they're paying, just on property taxes alone, they're paying $10 to $15 a square foot. So, I mean, it's a lot of money. Unfortunately, at this point, we have just the one vacancy. Interestingly enough, if you go down our corridors, though, there are not a significant amount of vacancies. In fact, I find more often people maybe calling or exploring, you know, do you have X amount of square feet around and things like that. So the good news, again, agreeing with all everything that you've all said, is that there still remains a high interest in wanting to do projects in River Forest, looking for potential space, and there really isn't a lot of available commercial space right now, which is a good thing.
Well, that's encouraging. So you're getting,
yeah, no,
some
interest. Yeah, I mean, my phone isn't ringing off the hook. I want to make sure we provide some context here. But yeah, we do get calls, and we do get people who have existing businesses who may want to expand or things of that nature. So yeah, no, it remains high. And again, if you drive up and down North Avenue, Lake, Madison's has a couple more challenges, but those corridors especially, there's not a lot of open spaces. The one at Towns there is that one on the corner there where they just, the visibility has always been a problem for them, where that restaurant was, where the Qdoba was. And then the whatchamacallit, the fresh, what was it?
Native foods.
Thank you. And actually, we're working with them right now and trying to change the facade of that building so it comes out a little bit more on an angle to provide, mm-hmm. so the signage can come out a little bit and things like that. So. But yeah, I mean, even when Tilly's went down and they were able to get Rally House right away, and their sales so far are very well, the Cubs winning certainly helped that as well. But great timing to open up a sports clothing shop. But those things are turning over very quickly.
I think that's really a great sign that, you know, but that's an interesting location. I mean, being right at the corner of Lake and Harlem, and you're near the train, and mm-hmm. you've got some mass. I think the challenges that we're going to face, and we've talked about this 10 times around here. I mean, it comes up regularly. You know, while there isn't a lot of existing small shop space, it's also less expensive. And we're talking about tearing down and replacing, and it will cost a lot more. Mm-hmm. And that dynamic is going to be impactful on the viability of who's going to go in it and actually who the options are. So. Hopefully it'll work out well, but it's going to be an interesting situation.
So the other items on the list, TIF district-wise, so Madison Street TIF district, that was adopted by the Village Board in November, and so that is on the books as we sit here today. And so we're very happy and pleased about that. With that being said, as you well know, TIFs are long-term plays for municipalities. These are not quick fixes by any means. So there's TIFs are 23 years in length and really become that financing arm for the municipality. So now that we've gotten that, we're going to hit the brakes there and then go back up north to the North Avenue TIF. And so we've re-engaged Kane McKenna, which is our TIF consultant. They're going back now and doing a lot of that due diligence work in terms of updating their reports, studies, things of that nature. One of the things we learned, I learned as well in terms of the Madison Street TIF district process was in terms of just general communication. And so we're going to work with our communication consultant and kind of double down in that area so that people are well aware of everything that's going on. When we got to the end of the TIF district process, I think we got a lot of that information out there. And so I think people were felt better about that, but trying to do more of that on the front end and being a little bit more proactive about that. So that that process in terms of getting all the studies updated, that's going on as we speak, and then I would imagine in the next couple months we'll start with some of that re-engagement with residents, business owners, folks on North Avenue, and getting the word out before we even really start that formal process. The formal process actually starts with a public meeting, and so before we even have that meeting, we want to have a meeting before the meeting, before we actually, you know, in the statute you have a series of steps that you have to take before we begin that process, because that starts the process. We want to have some engagement with folks before that.
I just have a question on the North Avenue. I'm a big fan of TIFs. I mean, I was deeply involved in the first TIF in River Forest, and I'm a strong proponent of it. I like the way it works and what the village has been able to do with those funds. I see North Avenue as a non-destination location that has tremendous difficulty being worthwhile to be a TIF for development, for the amount of effort that's going to go into it to make it happen. And I just, I'm not saying I'm against it, I just don't see it as a real viable solution to what we're trying to accomplish. I think there's less that we can do on North Avenue than we can on Madison. I mean, just looking at what you can't touch. I mean, we had opportunities 15, 20 years ago when Dominick's was still there, and the on Monroe on the east side of Dominick's, when those were apartment buildings before they were converted to condos, where you could have acquired effectively two blocks almost, and then had what we were talking about then as, you know, car dealership type things where you have, mm-hmm. and then you create a destination area just from a pure large geographical location on a major strip. But I see tremendous difficulties, and I hope the village isn't spinning its wheels on North Avenue. That's all. I mean, I'm certainly open to all good things, and I know Mr. McKenna personally, and I, you know, he'll come up with some great ideas, but I just think it's always heard if you don't have a destination, you aren't going to get the people to really utilize it unless you're going something non-commercial, and I don't, you know, I don't know. I'm done interrupting.
No, that's fine. Yeah. I appreciate it.
I'd like to say something. I agree in part with that, and I think one thing I've observed is on the Elmwood Park side, it is a destination, but it's not. And one of the impediments I see is that there's a lack of ability for pedestrians to cross near Monroe or William. And if we advance forward and the Montessori school, if that were to shut down for something, it's right there in a block, and that's already a destination for one community. We've got a new grocery store going up, but I agree the current configuration right now isn't very friendly. But I think tackling some of these problems like the crosswalk and how we add more retail on our side, because just having a grocery store on one side alone isn't going to solve it.
Well, actually, some of the things that you've raised are probably one of the reasons why we even talked about the TIF.
Why you do it, right?
Is because we recognize that there are some inherent limitations to how North Avenue is developed, and to the extent that over the course of time there becomes an opportunity to assemble parcels, help someone assemble parcels, and to, you know, find ways to change some of that dynamic is over the course of a 23-year period, we wanted to have the tools in place for the village to help facilitate that because of many of those limitations. And I think you're right. I mean, probably 20 years ago, some of it would have been easier, but we got another 20 years. So I think we're trying to be realistic. I think one of the things that we work really hard on is talking to Kay McKenna is that we wanted realistic expectations on the sort of increment that could be created because of the market conditions being very different now than they were 20 years ago, and the options being very different. You know, we can't put a McDonald's in the middle of it, or we're not going to have a Mariano's. You know, we have a Fresh Time, and we can't, you know, we just can't expect the sort of development that we might have had 20, 30 years ago on that strip. So we're just trying to give flexibility, understanding all the limitations, and to the extent opportunities come around, to be able to give the village tools to maximize or capitalize on those, especially with Elmwood Park doing what they're doing on the other side of North Avenue quite effectively.
Right.
And, you know, thinking that we can pair up with that, if we can help facilitate that partnering to improve that strip, we thought this would be a good tool with the limitations.
The other comment I would make, too, is that, you know, one of the things often overlooked with TIF districts is that the TIF funding can be used to assist existing businesses, structures, facilities, things like that. So it's not, and I always tell this to residents, so I have to make sure I'm consistent in my comments, is that it's not all about just grinding things down to the ground and starting over. Certainly that is a potential outcome, but it's also a potential outcome to reinvest in the existing businesses, the existing infrastructure, things like that. So that's still a possibility in that area.
Just one other thing, back on that. I hate to give up without really looking. You know, in a TIF, we don't have blight on North Avenue. At least I don't consider it blight.
Okay.
In any form, so that's gone. And the ability for the quick take there for the reasons that you can legitimately get away with it unless the owner really wants to fight the issue is much more limited than in other. I mean, when we had the Weebolts building, that was, you know, that was a pile of junk that needed to be removed. And you don't have that option. You're losing one of your big guns in the TIF theory because you're going to need willing people to do things. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't always happen.
Right. And I would say the other two comments I would make to that is even King McKenna in their preliminary review had indicated, I believe, four or five factors that they had that qualified under the TIF district. So they were not concerned about the qualification of the TIF. And again, the other thing to point out is in these projects, you know, I look at the TIF really as that primary financing tool. So let's step back to a lot of the conversations you folks just had about challenges in the development world. Construction costs is one of them, and I have heard that as well. So what starts to happen, and I've heard these conversations even for some of my colleagues in other areas and other municipalities, is you know, developers are coming in and saying, look, the cost of going doing business is coming up. Is driving up for all these reasons. Here's where I'm at. I need financial assistance even to try to get something done. And then the property, you factor in the property taxes, all these other things. So I think the TIF's even probably be more important for the reasons you all just talked about in terms of providing that assistance if you have a project that is worth has the merit in order to moving forward. So just food for thought.
Right. I think we went in eyes wide open on that. I think we understand there are a lot of limitations up on North Avenue, but I think our sense, as Colette said, was that, you know, A, we're looking at a long time frame. We don't know what's going to happen in 20-something, 23 years. B, without it, nothing will happen, I don't think. I mean, there may be market conditions that shift, but I don't think – so this does give a tool for developers, and acquisition is a TIFable expense, TIF-eligible. So there may be things like that that come into play over the course of the 23 years. This, in our mind, I think – it is still a front door and a primary corridor. I've always argued that we got to look at Elmwood Park, and you know, a corridor is two sides, and I think, you know, they're doing very well. We can leverage that positivity, the things that are coming off of that. So I think, you know, it's a tool, but without it, North Avenue is going to chug along, I think. And with that, this is certainly, I think, a positive for North Avenue and the redevelopment.
Moving the focus to Madison, now that the TIF is in place, my question is, I mean, the purpose of it is to encourage development, so what are we doing now to encourage development? So how does the development community know this is available? And we didn't do that TIF with a specific development in mind. We did it with the thought of creating a more favorable condition, but people need to know about those more favorable conditions, and they. It seems to me that we shouldn't just stop now and say, "Hey, we've got a TIF in place. We should actually do something more proactively to try to encourage development along Madison." I don't know what those steps are, but I would just throw that out there as a thought, so that we do take advantage of. What the TIF has to offer, and it just doesn't sit unused forever. for 23 years, which is a possibility, right?
How much increment is there, Eric? Just kidding.
Yeah, I mean, we may get something to trickle in at the end of this year. I'd have to go back and check with the finance director. I think where you'll see your initial major increase would be next fall, so in August of 2018, when the 2017 numbers come in as part of the reassessment, you'll see that, and then you'll see another probably larger increase when the townhome property becomes reassessed, because that all will be increment.
Who was the, just speaking of Madison Street, what was the renovation of the building next to Brighton Johnson? What went in there and
a union office. So it's a hotel, hospitality, beverage workers union.
So they didn't have any access to the TIF, did they?
No. They had inquired, and I told them no.
Is that Unite Here?
Huh?
Unite Here? Is that what went in
there? I don't know the name of it, but I don't. But it is. It's an office, so they basically gutted the whole thing.
Yeah, they did a nice job in renovation.
Yeah, no, they did. The building was in bad shape. The roof was leaking. There was water leaking through the roof. No one had done any work in there for a long time. So I think it was at a discounted price, too, as well.
Have we ever surveyed the community residents to see what types of shops the residents want, as opposed to wait for people to come in to lease the space?
We did a survey of businesses, but not of residents.
No, the residents, to see what things they desire and demand. Because, you know, I'm a relative newcomer, having only been here for 6 years, but it seems that everyone seems disappointed that we don't have more restaurants where you can have a cocktail, go meet up. I mean, when there have been campaigns and there have been parties, usually those parties move out of the area. And rather than leading from intuition, I think that some type of effort to survey the community to see, what does a community as a whole think? Do they don't want restaurants here? Do they don't want bars? How do they feel about those questions as it pertains to Harlem versus Lake versus North Avenue? Because I think a lot of people, you know, don't want a bar opening up near their house, but they may feel differently about entertainment venue near Harlem and Chicago, which might be able to support something like a Dave and Buster's or something that would cater towards those millennials that might want to be able to go out with their kids and not have to go to Oak Brook. But that's a mixture of a question and a perspective I've heard that I think that, you know, we might want to get some more data on.
I think that is a really interesting question. As the age and demographics of the community change, if we want to be forward-looking, we need to be looking at what millennials want, because we're all not going to be here for that long, right? So that's a really interesting suggestion. It may be something we want to pursue.
I don't know if we've ever worked with any of the university's business departments to see if they do a project where, you know, their business students could help with this so the project cost stays reasonable. But
we did that previously with Dominican, you know, on a marketing study.
And even if it wasn't totally scientific and it was an online poll that everyone sent around to their neighbors, it would be interesting just to hear from the community, because if there's certain types of businesses the community wants, there's nothing that precludes a TIF from helping to pay for the capital to ensure a business of that type could be there. Because certain businesses require more capital, and it's not that we're looking to run a restaurant or anything like that, but if there's certain types of businesses, lowering the cost of startup might be an option as part of one of the TIF developments.
Yeah. Surveys can be fairly easy if you have access to the list of residents. If you have their emails, you just send a link, and I use this kind of software all the time. You can use basic SurveyMonkey, or you can get more sophisticated. But I mean, do we want to, this as a commission, do we want to pursue that idea?
Well, Kathy sends out a regular email to whoever in the village she's got an email address for, right? I mean, there is a regular electronic distribution to at least some hub. I mean, I guess potentially you could have a link in there that links to a survey for people to, you know, go through it, you know, feed through it and go to answer it and give you some feedback. I mean, I think it would be interesting. And Lee, I totally think whatever happens needs to happen because it will be successful and because people will support it. I would have to say I would probably for myself have that expectation that people will think it'd be great to have X here, and X isn't really viable because right. of just the size of the community and the perceived competitive demographics and everything else that's around it, because we've thought about that aspect of it as part of some of the other RFP reviews that we were doing. But more information is never a bad thing. So, you know, maybe that's an option to craft something real simple that flows through with something, you know, comes out of the village. So it isn't a separate email, because I don't think people will pay attention to a separate email at all.
Yeah. Well, I think it would be good to, like, before something just happens, to have a group put together questions and leave some open-ended comment area, too, and a strategy for how to get the survey out there so that enough people know about it for enough time.
Kathy?
Yeah, that's a great point. I'll ask a question. How does the Old Park Development Corporation or the Chamber do their work in Old Park in terms of surveying? Do they do a survey at all?
We're really afraid of surveys, to be honest, because any one of us could have a Survey Monkey out by 8:30. You know, you throw together four questions. If you're not careful with implying an intentionality in how you're going to use the results, you've actually created a huge problem. Because I can tell you right now, they want a Crate and Barrel, they want a Nordstrom's, they want a Apple Store, right. and they want a Let Us Entertain You restaurant right across the street. And everyone at this table knows that none of that's going to happen. Unless you have the appetite for, as you suggested, Lee, are we willing to take the increment or the investment or whatever to offset 3 years of sales tax? Are you willing to give low interest loans for some of these folks to come in? Are you willing to do retail rehabilitation grants, awning grants, signage stuff? Because it's going to take a lot of money to get that. What we saw in Oak Park is a survey that went out, and the number one thing everybody wanted was a Target and a Apple Store, and that has haunted the village of Oak Park for 10 years. So now they are getting a Target, but what people don't realize, and they're not going to realize till the Target shows up, is that it's a 22,000 square foot glorified Walgreens. It is not what you see in Brickyard, is not what you see in Broadview. So we're careful about that. We're really, really careful about that. So some open-ended is really, really important because you want the people to have their say. But on the other hand, if there's not information that says, do you want it badly enough that your taxes are going to pay for their capital costs, and obviously you need a PR person to word that, it's scary. It's a scary thing to put out there that, yay, we all decided we wanted an Apple Store.
Lee, it's interesting. If you take a ride, and I like to call them the railroad towns, and you go out and you start and you go to Elmhurst and you go to Glen Ellen and you go to Wheaton and you go to Western Springs and you go to Hinsdale and you go to LaGrange, and you see how the development has happened there, and it really has been because they've been able to take some big blocks down, especially like in LaGrange. I mean, they had some big pieces of property, so they were able to do it there. You move over to Western Springs, and really the linchpin of Western Springs is the corner of Wolf Road and the railroad tracks there. They have that one building there that's really been kind of the impetus for the commercial development that's going on. They got that really nice restaurant, but they were able to provide parking. And so, you know, as I've talked with people who I know, and we've talked about these subjects here, our biggest issue is we want to be able to maximize a development, but we're not able to provide parking. So, you know, as you look at these kinds of developments, how are you going to provide parking to get the restaurants and the kind of things that you're talking about? Mm-hmm. So, you know, I really think it's a size issue as opposed to what people want. People will support it, but if you go there and you can never park, or you have to Uber there every time, maybe that works out well for you. But, you know, the key is maximizing it and getting the parking in place. And a lot of those communities have been able to do that.
Yeah.
But how does an operation like Oak Park, with essentially very limited parking along Oak Park Avenue, where you have successful restaurants like Maya, and then the hamburger places across the street, and George's, and some of that, and there's essentially, you know, finding a parking space is a challenge at all times, mm-hmm. and you're wandering around. So sometimes when you build a better mousetrap, people will take a little inconvenience. Though I can't disagree that parking is a convenience. Yes. But if you say, I really want to go to Maya, so you walk two blocks.
Right.
You know? Right. That's what it is.
But we can't even supply a large parking deck to provide the two-block walk. It's an interesting dynamic. It's a little bit of a chicken and egg and what are the pluses and minuses. But back to the survey idea, I think it's an interesting approach. I think Oak Park's experience is something to think about and maybe a way to temper the questions that are asked.
Correct.
But I do believe expectations will be totally outsized to the realities of what could probably be delivered, and I would not want us to mislead folks. Given some of like the dialogue that we had when we were talking about the lake and park situation, I mean, you know, the whole idea of the retail on the first floor, and everybody wants this energized streetscape, and they want all of this energy, but they don't want the traffic, they don't want this, they don't want that kind of come with it. So it's like you want it, but you don't want the downsides of it. And so there's a little bit of a push and pull in that model. Yeah. But information's a good thing. And if we can figure out a way to do it without raising expectations or having people, you know, kind of get their feelings hurt when it's like, oh, great idea, but no. You know, don't really want to do that. Because people around here get their feelings hurt pretty easily.
I think that all makes sense. The one thing that I see is the biggest, I look at where the opportunities are based on traffic flow and utilization. And I see Harlem is uniquely positioned because there's a university nearby that could produce a lot of bodies that don't need cars. And the proximity to the train isn't necessarily as far. And a lot of the River Forest residents I talk to wouldn't be offended by the idea of, you know, an adult-oriented place you could go to have a cocktail, have a party, have a martini bar. And there's been a general insinuation that River Forest doesn't want that type of business from what I've gathered. And without getting into, do we want a Target or do we want a Walmart or do we want a Ma and Pa, you know, do we want to have entertainment venues on Harlem? You know, that's a basic question that, you know, anyone leading forth, if you don't do that homework first, you're going to get a lot of flack. And there will always be a few people that will fight anything. But just knowing, you know, does a community want more of that? I think that's important because when we looked at the millennials, what millennials wanted and trying to market to them from a club perspective, they were very big on convenience, technology. They ate out a lot, and dining was a big thing. And you add kids to that mix. Okay, does that mean we need a place like Replay? That I don't know if anyone's been to Replay in the city, but it's a kind of a tavern restaurant that has a bunch of video games. You know, later on in the evening, it becomes more like a bar, but during the day, it's more like a restaurant. And kids come during the day, they play video games while their parents can talk and eat a sandwich. So some of those things, a business like that, I could see doing very well near Chicago and Harlem. But we're not going to attract, you know, the entrepreneur doesn't even want to go down that road if there's not a statement from the community that we're open to those proposals.
But I don't think that Harlem actually has frontage that's actually going to happen. I mean, when you
that's
think
another
about,
good point, because I saw several properties for sale for $300,000, $330,000.
But they're residential, right?
Exactly.
But they're single-family houses, which is a rezoning issue. And, you know, I think Harlem, from a traffic flow and a lot of stuff, would be great, but I think the potential of gathering those and getting through the zoning process is probably a little bit more difficult than one might assume. I think those lots should be commercial, but they're single family right now. But if you think about the spacing, you don't have a lot of opportunity for that given what's developed on our side of Harlem with the Forest Preserve. Then you got McDonald's, then you got Chase, then you got housing, then you've got the synagogue, and you've got housing, then you've got the school. I mean, and you've got the park, the Priory. I mean, there's just not a lot there. would have been great. I don't know if that boat sailed, but I mean, being open to what opportunities may come along are great, but we don't have a TIF to help facilitate anything on Harlem, and because that wasn't one of the corridors we really focused on, and I don't think the corridor study has said that Harlem is one of those places we need to spend a lot of energy on. So I don't know if we have any tools to even help facilitate if it came down the pike.
I hate to cut off the discussion because it's a great conversation, but we're an hour into the meeting and we have got a lot of other items we want to
Hang on, Tom. One second. I'm drawing all these conversations together. I think what it calls for is a policy of some kind for the village, for the board to be proactive in development. I think that's what we're saying here. I think all these things lead to having a strategy. We have tools now, and when we did those tools, we had some strategy in place. But it really points to now: what are the key areas for redevelopment? Is it Chicago and Harlem? There's one opportunity there, you know, not a lot, but that's the anchor. Are there other areas like that? And that goes through a comprehensive plan and priorities and development. I think all those things become very important as you now put these tools together, and then you can be proactive. I am wholeheartedly endorse being proactive in planning and pushing out these opportunities into the development community. So your question before, should we be, you know, I think all these things come point to that we need that proactive planning.
Thank you.
So what do you recommend? We're going to come out to do another comprehensive plan soon. I mean, what does the EDC recommend in terms of beginning a strategy for Madison and North Avenue when that becomes a tip? Which recommendations? What should we do?
Well, I know there's other things on the agenda, but I do think you need a comprehensive plan. I think the plan shouldn't be a plan that sits on a shelf. It needs to have a strategy behind it. And I think you go through it, you look at the unique opportunities where TIF can leverage and help development, and then I think you prioritize those projects and actively pursue and offer those services. You know, and
when are you doing the comprehensive plan? What's
that? This year.
Okay.
Well, I think that's a start.
Okay.
And I think identifying that we've got TIF in these certain areas, some of the comprehensive plan also takes into account what the citizens, what the residents want, correct? So I think that may answer some of your questions also.
But I think having some participation by maybe the planners on the EDC with maybe some input from people involved on the market side as these things get developed and fleshed out and you look at things with a fresh set of eyes, maybe, you know, kind of a joint effort between the board and the planning department and the EDC before it gets presented, just so everybody's got some different perspectives to add to the conversation. You know, maybe, golly, that mobile site comes up, mobile decides they don't want a gas station there anymore, there's a great opportunity for us to look at doing something else there. So there may be some great ideas to plan to add in.
I'd just also add that while Oak Park's a different animal, it does have paid staff that does this. You know, that there are four people full-time, both 3.5 people, who are pushing these development opportunities. So just something to consider.
It does make a difference.
Makes a difference.
And again, a comprehensive plan is great, and I think we have them. We have a requirement to update and all that. A plan without a strategy, an implementation strategy, is no good. So I think that's a real emphasis. And I'm not saying we didn't have it in the past, but it is a plan. I would rather call it a comprehensive strategy, actually, than a plan, because I think they're is a false sense of.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay.
Sorry. Thank you.
No,
sidebar.
No apologies. So two other things then. One real quick, just on North Avenue, we've talked about Fresh Thyme Farmers Market. The work as related to the structural components of that building have been completed. There's been a lease amendment worked out between Mid-America, who owns the representative of the owner, which is a pension fund, and Fresh Thyme. They've worked that out. That's completed. So Fresh Thyme is back into the building. The building and the lease have been turned over to Fresh Thyme, and they're working on the build-out. The good news was they had ordered all their fixtures and supplies, so they were sitting somewhere in a warehouse in the city. So they're doing the work right now in terms of the build-out, and they've targeted an August 1st opening.
Taking forever.
Well, when you had to rebuild the foundations, the three walls and the bowstring truss of the roof, and they pumped well over $1 million into that building.
Probably needed it.
Sunday over there, so
yeah, we have.
Yeah.
They're going crazy.
We've given them some flexibility in that regard to try to move them along.
And then their union issues have been interesting.
Yeah. Yes. There's in my career, I have seen the progression of the inflatable rat structures.
Yes.
As many of you have.
And there was the
seen.
Fat cat out there, too.
Right. Well, exactly. It's kind of, you know, the First Amendment's a great thing, and it's allowed some creativity in that regard. So we applaud people's creativity all the time. And then finally, Lake and Park. And so you folks all remember that initial process. The village board concurred with the staff recommendation about 2-3 weeks ago to go ahead and re-RFP that project. And so there had not been any progress in terms of what the board had elected or endorsed a year, 12, 18 months ago. And so we're going to start that process up again. I've gotten proposals from consultants to help in that process. So we're going to get a consultant who's new to the village, give us a fresh set of eyes on that RFP, re-RFP it, go back out in the street and see what we can pull together there.
A suggestion on that, you know, you relayed earlier when you were talking about TIF, the communication. I think it's really important that there's really a good communication plan put together on this.
Okay.
Because on the first go-round, it seemed like there was a lot of conversation about things that people really weren't sure how they were going to be handled, i.e., you know, what was going to be the effect on the school. You know, people thought people were going to be moving into this building and not paying any taxes. And so, you know, which kind of goes against, you know, common sense and property ownership. But it just seems like there's a lot of conversation around it. I would just suggest that as we move forward, we have some upfront communication on it to make sure, you know, people know exactly what's happening, how it happens, the time frames, and be as transparent as possible on it.
Yeah, I think one of the things you'll see, too, is once we get to that point in the process, and this would run back through the EDC in terms of evaluation, you're going to have two things will change a little bit. One, we'll have a consultant engaged to help you along in terms of some of the evaluation of the business plans of these proposals, and then getting word out more proactively to the community that the evaluation of these proposals is taking place, having some evening meetings to facilitate that, so you know, people are well aware of what's going on. You know, at the end of the day, people may not always agree with a decision, certainly, but that no one can come back and say, well, I didn't know this was even taking place. That's what we want to avoid. Yeah.
Who's the consultant that we're using?
We haven't made that final determination yet, but I hope to have that on the next board agenda.
And what is the scope of the consultant? You've alluded a little bit, but what are they doing?
They're going to help create the RFP.
They're writing it?
They're writing the RFP. I mean, obviously, we have a base by which it's already been done, so they'll probably start from that framework. They won't start from the beginning. But they'll go ahead and write the RFP, issue the RFP, have it go back out on the street. Once the RFPs come back in, they'll help evaluate them. They'll help facilitate the discussion with the EDC and the village board in terms of those reviews, evaluate revenue and tax implications of those proposals, and then any other duties as we see fit. But those would be the main driving points.
What about a role for that consultant in actually getting this out to the development community and getting a response? I mean, we had experiences of getting no response, and then we had experience of getting a few, and I think that last round sent some messages to the development community about the process and so on. So I think that's a concern. We want to make sure that we're going to get responses, and so it's got to have a lot of credibility that the subsequent process will be one they can engage in, and, you know, put in a reasonable amount of effort and find out whether or not they can move forward without overcommitting. So I think it's not going to be easy to get responses on it. So I think a role for the consultant in that regard would be important.
Yes.
I also think you have to be careful because this is now the third time, fourth time. I mean, you want to make sure that it comes off as real and that it's actionable. So I think there's you only get a few bites with the development community. And I think that's part of the concern now. We're going to go out again. So how you craft that and send that message out, I think is going to be very important. What do you see as the role of the EDC on this?
The EDC would, in my opinion, review the RFP before it goes out on the street. Once the RFP goes on the street, those development proposals will come back in. Again, working hand in hand with the consultant, then evaluate those proposals, a similar process that we had before, and then ultimately make a recommendation to the village board. And in, to your point about credibility, I think two comments I would make to that. One, I think having a different consultant come in that we haven't used previously just to give us a fresh set of eyes and reissue it through that lens and context, I think is important. I think that's going to help. And again, I can tell you I've talked to, again, my phone isn't ringing off the hook, but I have talked to about two or three different folks about the site. Mm-hmm. So I would say there certainly is interest. I don't think we're ever going to get 15 or 20 proposals, but I think we can get I'm hopeful we can get some meaningful development. And part of the scope of what we're looking at with the consultant is to help issue that RFP, be that advocate, if you will, to help market what we're trying to do here.
Well, since the EDC would be working with that consultant going forward, could you share who you're dealing with, and perhaps we could give you some input? We might know these groups. Some of us might, so we could give you some input. Not that we would make the selection, just give you some input.
Oh, sure, I can pass. I can, once we get where I would probably have the information for you here in a day or two. So once I have that, I can forward that to you. Absolutely.
Okay, great. And if we have any insight on any of the prospective consultants, why don't we could individually email Eric. Just for new members, just to be clear on our communications, we're governed by open meetings, and so we can't have discussions and of these kind of policies as a group online, because that's would be constituted an unnotified public meeting. So if you do respond to something, do so individually, do so to Eric, not to the group, so that we're not inadvertently holding a non-public meeting.
I agree.
Okay. All right.
Last question on that, on Lakin Park. In the memo you sent, it said you're going out for a broader RFP. What does that mean?
More generic.
What does that mean?
Well, in terms of, in fact, I'm reading it right now. Make sure.
Or what is the direction?
It was actually pretty generic last time.
It was, but it had a preference. We had, I think, preferences towards mixed use and things like that. Are you suggesting it could be something altogether different?
Yeah, I know. I just let the market. I think in general, I think it's important to keep, unless you have a specific use and item you're looking for, I think it's important to be generic, to let the private market and the development community speak to what they think can work there. I think that's always one of my concerns in general, and it kind of tack on to a conversation you had earlier, is there's always expectation and reality for what people want. I think residents sometimes have a tendency that we can pull these levers somehow, and then all of a sudden I can create a certain retail opportunity to exist. And I think to your point about the Apple Store, I think that's a real good example where that doesn't, certainly we can facilitate things, we can drive things, we can help promote ideas and drive strategies, but at the end of the day, the market's going to do what the market wants to do. And so I think in general in RFPs, I try to be more generic as opposed to be very specific, to allow consultants and developers to respond back and give us their best ideas and suggestions. And then really it's incumbent upon this group of the village board to then make a determination on whether they like those or not. That being said, I think as I pointed out, if you think there are specific things and opportunities you think would work there, as you review the RFP, you'll put that in there as well. But the RFP would come back to you and the village board before it would go back on the street. I'm speaking in this, but then I just want to make sure we're clear. There's really two RFPs. There's the RFP that we're managing internally to pick a consultant, and I'll share that proposal with you as well, and then we would have the RFP for the developer.
Well, and that was also my question related to the consultant. Are they going to help? Because I respond to them, so I know the other flip side of it. I also help on behalf of municipalities and all do this, but devoid of any kind of sense of from the community or from the leadership of what they want, without some, it has to be viable. Sometimes those RFPs can, or a mixed bag, you can get all kinds of responses to it, or you've got a bunch of guys out there spending a lot of money throwing darts at what they think the village wants. So I think a little direction is good,
okay.
A preference, But obviously, and that's where the consultant can help say what's more viable or not, I think. So I don't know if that's in the scope.
Well, the consultant and, quite frankly, you all.
And actually, well, yeah, I agree. And that all goes back to the comprehensive plan and priorities and actually putting together viable solutions. So that kind of all comes full circle. But having strategies in place that are viable, that help give direction. I agree, you do not want to be prescriptive at all. Mm-hmm. But you do want to, I think, give some indication of what you think is viable based on professional opinion and all that, and give some sense of direction, because otherwise you may get 1,000 different, well, 1,000's a little high, 3, 4, but very different uses, and then mm-hmm. you know everybody's going to love one or the, you know. So it just, I think direction helps, preference helps.
Okay. Well, and more to follow on that, because yeah. you'll have yeah. the input before okay. we pull the trigger on that.
Yeah. Okay.
Eric, are there other items you would like to update us?
No, those are the big ones. We did talk previously at the last meeting about Chicago and Harlem over at the TCF Bank site, and mm-hmm. so there continues to be some interest in that location, but again, we're coming back to challenges on the site and the size of the site, mm-hmm. and so that will probably continue to be a challenge as that project, whatever that project might be. There is no specific project yet at this point. But that will continue to be a challenge as well.
Thank you, Eric. Any other business questions people would like to raise?
What will our next be?
That's our next agenda item. That's a good question. We
is there a timing we need to meet to address something?
Yeah, I will. I mean, what I'd like to see at the next meeting, if at all possible, is that there's a conversation about the RFP. And
when, right.
The consultant RFP?
No, the consultant RFP, I want to get that approved next week by the board. So I'm talking about you and the consultant meeting to talk about the development RFP. So sometime in early April.
April 3rd? Is that too early?
Hang on a second.
That's a Monday.
I'm in 2016. Hang on, what happened here?
2017.
I know.
It's time flying.
You're supposed to be used to
that by now. Yeah, right. Yeah. Still writing my checks for 2016. I might still write in checks. We could set the, if you're available, we could set the 3rd, and I can try to push the consultant to have a draft, some sort, because I want you all to react to some stuff. If nothing else, even if it's in final, it's not in final form, it would be in draft language form.
Always a solid maybe.
Yes, a solid maybe.
When is spring break? Is it the last week of March?
Last week in public schools, I believe, is last week in March. And
I don't know if there's ability to maybe push it back a week.
What about?
A lot of people will be doing a trip the week before.
How about pushing it to Friday of that week, the 7th? Instead of doing it on the Monday, do it on the Friday?
Yeah, it's a possibility. Yeah, I'm open.
So April 7th.
April 7th, 7:30 a.m.
Yep.
Oh, I won't make that.
Okay, let's not.
It's the Grass Camp Center conference.
Oh. Could you make the 6th?
UW Madison Grass Camp Real Estate School.
Can you make the 6th?
Yes, I could make the 6th, but I'm only one. So
well, we should.
Yeah. Six is
better
than seven.
Six appears better. Okay. All right. April 6th, 7:30 a.m. It is. Wonderful. That's all we have in the agenda. Absent any other questions, concerns, do I have a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Second?
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Meeting adjourned. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.